Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Room 42. I'm Liz Fraley. You're from Single Sourcing Solutions. I'm your moderator. This is Janice Summers, our interviewer, and welcome to today's guest, Carlos Evia, professor of communication in the College of Liberal Arts and Human Sciences at Virginia Tech, where he is affiliated with the Center for Human-Computer Interaction, Communicating Science and Humanities. During this 2020-2021 academic year, he's the faculty fellow at El Centro, the Hispanic and Latinx Cultural Community Center. His research and teaching work focuses on planning and developing technology-based content solutions for workplace communication problems, particularly in situations involving multicultural audiences or misrepresented communities. He's the co-chair of the OASIS Lightweight Data Committee as well. Today, he's here to help start answering the question, how can everyone have intelligent content and how can lightweight data help with that? Welcome, Carlos.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Carlos. We're so excited to have you today.
Thank you.
Always such a pleasure to talk with you. You are extremely interesting and there's never a dull moment and there's so many things that you have that you can share with us. But today, could you help explain to me, what's lightweight data?
Isn't that something interesting? What is like Coke and Diet Coke? It is very hard to describe Diet Coke without describing Coke first.
Okay. So
if I tell you, Diet Coke is a refreshing drink that has low calories.
Right.
I can do that without going deep into what is Coke. But you know, I will have to be like, if I really want to give you a very good definition, I'll have to tell you. Oh, and by the way, Coke is this soft drink that has been around for a very long time and some people really enjoy. But it turns out that if you drink it a lot, like if it were water, it's not good for you. And it gives you diabetes and heart problems and you die. And that's not fun. So it's kind of like that, not to the extreme.
Well, not the death
I can
part.
Give you a very simple definition. Lightweight data is a methodology for structuring and publishing information. Mm-hmm. And that's super simple. But the longer explanation where we connected to the parent product, it's not really product, it's a standard. It's like lightweight data is a simplified of the it's a simplified form of the Darwin information typing architecture, which is a very popular and robust standard for mm-hmm. structuring and publishing mostly technical information, but also many other forms of content. Mm-hmm. And when data can be very helpful for many situations, it can also be detrimental for the health of some people who try to implement the full power of data into tiny, tiny, little scale projects. And that right. is not going to give you diabetes and kill you, but it can make your project go, because you're trying to use a very powerful, robust thing for a tiny, tiny content problem. And that's what we hope to solve with lightweight data. Here, take this light version that doesn't have all the things, all the content, all the rules that come with data, but will give you some of the same results in when it comes to single sourcing your content, to doing multi-channel publishing, to doing content reuse, and to keeping everything neatly contained and structured in places in which you're going to know where things are. And when you publish, you deliver something, your audience is not going to know what came from where. They're just going to see a very, you know, streamlined, coherent document in a PDF, in a website, in an EPUB, or whatever you want to give them. And they're going to be like, yeah, you solved my problem. Thank you. So that's the definition. I hope that made sense.
All of the flavor of data without all the calories.
Yes, something like that. You can use the slogan as, you know.
So, because, I mean, data is an architecture. There's a lot of rules. I don't even know how big the spec is. Like, what, 300?
Like, we're working right now on the spec for data 2.0. And I say we, even though I am tangentially in the spec editing group. It's mainly right. Chris Eberlein and Robert Anderson. But I do some work because the lightweight data spec is connected to the data 2.0 yeah. spec. So we edit some topics together. And I don't know, we're talking about what? If you were to print it on a PDF, it would be 800 pages probably.
Wow.
So there's a lot going on. And nobody expects that if you say, I'm going to use data for my content problem, nobody expects that you're going to have to learn everything
right.
or use everything. use right. what makes sense to your context. But, you know, that can be intimidating for people who are new to content and have not worked with technical documentation and have not worked with XML. So when you see the data spec, it's okay that, you know, you might be scared. And that's why we want to have lightweight data as an easier, simpler approach.
Because there's a lot of technical discipline that goes in a full data implementation. And that can be quite cumbersome if you're not in technical publication. Let's say you're just in professional communications, but you want to adopt the basic principles of DITA with some organization. So that's where you would apply lightweight DITA?
Yes. And you get what I told you, you know, you have your topic-based authoring. You can reuse content from to the words at the word level, at the sentence level, at the paragraph level, at the whole topic level. You can customize it with variables for filtering for different types of audiences, different types of platforms, and many other things that you want to do. And then you can use data friendly or data aware tools so you can publish to different channels. And that would, you know, give you many different outputs that come from the same source. And one of the things that we are adding in lightweight data, that's one of the main selling points, even though we don't sell it, it's free. Is that you can use XML if you're happy with XML, or you can also use HTML if you're happy with HTML, or you can use Markdown if the idea of having those angle brackets in XML or HTML scare you. So again, we're trying to make it more inclusive, more accessible for people who normally would not be, like you said, working in technical communication and really working with XML. So we present different options and possibilities that still give you similar results as if you were working in a DITA environment.
So that's very interesting, because in DITA, it's all XML, correct? Just XML. But in lightweight DITA, XML or HTML or Markdown. So it allows for the flexibility for someone who can, you know, if they're comfortable with XML, go ahead and use XML, but they can adopt HTML. That's interesting. Now, how long have you been working on this standard, this architecture?
My co-chair in the lightweight data subcommittee is a dude named Michael Priestley, who you might know if you use data, because he invented the thing. And Michael and Don Day, who also was on the team that invented data, started drafting the idea of a simplified version of DITA in 2013. And I kind of got involved with them around 2014. And we have been through many different versions and iterations. At one point, we had even more languages that we wanted to bring in. We were working on mapping DITA structures to something that was compatible with Microsoft Word or with JSON in ASCII doc. And at one point we were like, okay, if we really want to deliver something that we guarantee that works and you can use content from one to the other and all the way around, we decided to concentrate on those three flavors. We have XData that is based on the XML, HData in HTML, and MData in Markdown. Of course, there are commercial tools available that allow you to bring in JSON, Word, and other things. And as part of the committee with Oasis, we don't really endorse those because, you know, we don't sell things, but we appreciate that the vendors create and develop other approaches that allow you to bring even more input sources. So I'm happy if people use the things.
Yeah, you want to be agnostic to tools, but you want to let them in so that they know how they can accommodate for the standard. I mean, I think that's kind of important to give them all that equal playing field, right?
I agree. And I'm happy when I hear that a company or a developer has support for lightweight DITA and that they expanded it and now they allow you to use JSON or something different. That's okay. It's not part of the standard. Maybe one day, when we create version 2.0 of lightweight DITA, if there's enough interest and support, we might make a formal standard that brings DITA structures to JSON or other languages. But the majority of requests, because, you know, this is not something that we sat down and we were like, yeah, let's just do it. I mean, by talking to people, by going to conferences, and the data adoption committee held working groups and focus groups with people all over the country. And they asked them, what are the approaches and languages, syntaxes that you want to see and become compatible with data topics and data environments and data repositories? And those were the three ones. We want a simplified version of data XML. We want one that is based on HTML, and we want one that is based on Markdown. And that's, you know, because many developers were using or are still using Markdown for writing release notes and all sorts of technical content, including some form of, you know, API documentation that is still coming in Markdown. So we that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to give people who already had content or were developing content in Markdown the possibility of bring their content and make it compatible with data structures and data environments.
Mm-hmm. So almost defining the pathway.
Yep. And we don't say you have to use all of these three flavors in your pathway to be using lightweight data.
Right.
You can be only using MData and hey, you're using lightweight data. Or you can only be using XData and yeah, you're using lightweight data, but you can use them all and exchange and interchange content from this to this and to that. And you know, there's already people using that in many different industries. And I told you last week at the Convex conference, it was very interesting to hear from people that I have never met. And they were like, yeah, we're using lightweight data. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, again, we don't make money out of it. It's an open standard. So power to the people. If it works for you, if it makes you happy, I'm happy because I'm accomplishing that goal of making data more accessible and to a degree more inclusive by bringing people who normally will not be using the standard to embrace some of the principles of the standard and the capabilities of the data standard.
Interesting. It makes for tough spec work though.
Oh my gosh. If you only knew. Do you know Alan Hauser,
who was
president of the Society for Technical Communication? Alan is a very good friend. Don't ask him about the process of writing the lightweight data spec because he's gonna say mean things about it. But I think I have an enormous amount of respect for Chris Eberlein, who is the chair of the Data Technical Committee. I consider her a very close friend, and she has done an amazing job of hours, unpaid hours, because nobody pays her for this, to really make the connection from the Data 2.0 topics to the lightweight data topics that are gonna be feeding both specs. All I have to do is go in there and write a couple of things because the structure that she has created is impressive. And it's probably Chris Eberlein is the only person who understands how it works. I kind of can go in there and see what's going on. But without her, I would be nothing. She's the brains of the operation when it comes to anything data related. Yes.
She does work a lot and work really hard on it. That is a fact. But yeah, you know, it was funny. You say it's 800 pages. Last time I read the S1000D spec, it's close to 3000. I mean, you know, it spec work is not easy. It's a tough thing to figure out how far to go and where to go and when to diverge and separate and when not to. That's not an easy job. And more power to you all for participating and doing it.
Yep. And, you know, the reward in this case is not money. The reward is not fame. Because how many people who use data know who Chris Eberlein is? I mean,
like everyone.
I mean, so the reward is when you hear that somebody is using it. The reward is when you see a manual and you can tell that came from that looks like a PDF from the OT. So that's the reward when you hear that you're helping people.
Very nice.
And of course, some people make money out of it. Let's be honest. The consultants, vendors do make money out of it. But the spec work is not intended as a commercial product. So there's no money behind that.
I wonder how many hours Because this is quite daunting. You have to go through. Tell us, how do you go about beginning even documenting the spec? How does that all work?
In the case of lightweight data, we started with OASIS, which is our home for the standard, right. the Organization for the Advancement of Structured Information Standards. We started with a product that they call the committee note. And the committee note is like a white paper that starts by defining what lightweight data is, what are the flavors, the authoring formats that we're going to have in lightweight data, and what elements and structures from data are we bringing to lightweight data and how to represent those in the different authoring formats of lightweight data. Examples, and then a table that lists all the possible attributes that the elements can have.
Right.
And that was the genesis for the spec.
Okay.
And that baby, with all the hoops that you have to go through to get approval at the subcommittee level, at the committee level, because it's open work, it has to be open up for review to the general public.
Right.
I think that baby was about a year of, you know, writing, revising, publishing, reviewing, and waiting for people to give feedback, incorporating feedback. And the Chris and Robert Anderson from Oracle have been working on the 2.0 spec as their main editors for more than a year too. And I've been working on the lightweight data spec for more than a year too. So that's busy work. And Joanna Hackus has a very good article that was published in the IEEE Transactions and Professional Communication a few years ago that talks about the process of creating specs. And it's intense, and to a degree it's supposed to be slow on purpose.
Right.
So people have a chance to contribute and people have a chance to review. We can try it. We can test it before we say, this is it. These are the rules. You better use them. So,
what kind of surprises did you run into when you were working on this project?
Well, people already had their implementations because, I mean, If you're a developer, or even if you're just a user of data and you know how to specialize things, you can just go ahead and create your own simplified version of lightweight data.
Right.
So when we released the initial draft, a couple of users came out and said, I already have something like that. So by making it part of the spec, you're breaking my own little implementation. And I was like, so what do you say? You're like, no. Take it. This is the official version and you're going to like it. So we had to be like, oh, yes, and see what they have. Be sure that it's compatible with what they have and then make a new version. And that has happened with, and right now it's happening with IBM. IBM, or the big mommy of data,
right,
has also been in a related, not necessarily completely parallel, but sometimes intersecting path of the developing of MData. That's the Markdown-based version of lightweight data. It all started from the same place where Michael Priestley was very involved into the in the development of MData. But then Michael went into marketing at IBM, and the development of MData went in a different path. And Jennifer Schlaufen is the one who is leading that, and she's an awesome person. And she's Mexican-American, by the way. The last name will not tell you that, but Mexican-Americans rule the world. That's another story. So Jennifer is now part of the Lightweight Data Subcommittee, and we are looking at what she and her team developed for IBM that smells like MData, but is not necessarily MData. So we have to say, okay, you already have this in production. And if we release MData as a standard that it does not take on the consideration of the work that you have done, you're not going to be compatible. So we have to take a look at what they have done and implement it into the draft of the MData standard. So now they are, again, intersecting. They started from the same place, but they were in different paths of evolution. And now we're bringing it back together. So that has happened quite frequently. That we say, yeah, let's do this. And somebody comes out and says, we already have that. And we put it in, you know, in production. And if you make this the official version, what we have is going to become obsolete. And again, we want to be inclusive. We want to make this accessible for people. So we're like, good, share, we take a look at it. And then if we can, we incorporate it and we revise it and we try to negotiate with some people and be like, yeah, this approach is simpler and you don't need a bunch of configuration in your code. And that's the main surprise that we have encountered.
And it's important. I mean, that's one of the nice things when you include others, because the universe will find a way. I mean, give somebody a standard.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, okay, I'm going to comply, but I can find a little different way to tweak things here a bit and still be compliant. So by sending that out, you found that there were people out there, free range, already doing their own version, right? So it's when you call out to people and they respond, this is the key thing. People need to interact and respond and share candidly what they're doing so that that can be, oh, okay, that's, you know, a thought starter for you, or maybe it shifted your thinking. Was there anything that somebody did that like totally like switched you guys or kind of said, oh, like that's pretty revolutionary. How can we infuse that into what we're doing?
Yes. Garen Torikian was a content strategist / developer at GitHub. He doesn't work for GitHub anymore. He is in New York. He has his own firm. Garen started, he invented a system that will do, if you're familiar with Dita, you might know the conref, the content reference. Mm-hmm. The conref is a reuse mechanism in Dita that allows you to call phrases, paragraphs, or words from another topic, and you don't have to type it again. You don't have to copy and paste it. When you build, when you transform your Dita repository, it will magically populate any things that call a content reference. Yeah. So when GitHub was building its approach on how they were going to do their documentation, markdown-based documentation, Garen Torikian was part of the team that created as a tribute to Dita, saying, we're not using Dita, but we like Dita. So we're inventing, oh, Dita people, this tribute to you, the conref in markdown. And the conref in GitHub markdown is with a liquid variable and the double squigglies that fetches content from a data file. And that's awesome, but that was not part of any standard because at the time there was no MData, there's no markdown standard.
Right.
So Garen is an awesome guy. He's not a member of the subcommittee. He's not a member of Oasis, but I will email him and I will Skype. That's before we had Zoom, I think. Skype with him and present approaches to him. So how about we do this? How about we do that? And he will always give me his feedback and input. And I think that that made MData stronger and that made MData more compatible with the structures of Dita. Because in its original version, MData was only going to be very presentational. That's just a markdown file, a couple of headings, heading one, heading two, no heading three, list items and paragraphs, and there's a picture, goodbye. But because of that kind of involvement, now it's more robust, single source friendly, reuse friendly, proposed standard that, you know, solves problems for people who really need to have topic-based, single sourcing friendly, reuse friendly, intelligent content. So that kind of collaboration with people in the community who are not even members of the body that creates the standard.
And I think that's an important thing that you mentioned, is that you reach not just the usual suspects, those are the committee members, but reaching outside of the committee, because the community is quite large and significant. Yeah. So it's good to operate outside of your immediate circle, because including from outside, look what you gain. It's tremendous.
Yeah, and when we had a draft of the committee note, I will email people that, you know, were not members of Oasis and be like, hi, we developed this thingy. Do you want to take a look at it and give us feedback? And some of them said yes, and some were like, I'm too busy, but thank you for thinking about me. But, you know, that's how we got input that we would not have considered, because we live in our own little worlds and we work in our own stacks and environments, and we don't have a use case for what somebody is going to be thinking about. No, you have to have this feature because I need it. Okay. Talk about it. Yeah.
You must.
Right. So if someone has a share they'd like to make, should they reach out to you?
Yes. Why not? Yeah. All right. Now, something that I have to tell you, we have to do the proverbial drawing a line on the sand. That we have, we're pretty much done adding features to Lightweight Data 1.0. The last one that we have is Jennifer from IBM is working on a draft of an MData map to aggregate topics. Yeah. And that's the last thing that we're going to include as a feature in Lightweight Data 1.0. So everything that happens after that is going to be under consideration for a new version of Lightweight Data, you know, because there's always a 2.0.
Yeah, always something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's always something. So it's like, okay, next word. So, I mean, you don't want to turn off the spigot, but it's like, okay, look, but we're not going to implement in 1.0. Because at some point you got to get that release.
And I think the Data 2.0 spec is at the same point too. Chris had to, you know, draw the line.
Yeah,
that's it, people. No more features.
Because yeah,
if we continue implementing that, the spec is not going to be ready like ever. Yeah.
Yeah, because the review process is quite arduous.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, if you go and change something, then it has to go through review again.
And not just internal, but external, because everything that we do is open. It has to be sent out to the public to get feedback, and you know, that can take months.
Right. So you just start bucketing for version 1.x.
You heard him. Send him your shares. Tell him how you're using Data. Awesome. So just because I'm unclear myself, is it a separate spec? Not part of the, like it's, they are diverged, different namespaces, different specifications.
There are different specifications that come from the same document. Here's a bigger picture. For Data 2.0, the base spec that has the topic and the map is going to be a document. And then Lightweight Data is going to be its own document that takes some of the content from the base, but also adds its own stuff. And then the Data 2.0 technical content that most people think is Data, concept, task, reference, glossary, and troubleshooting is going to be another document. Sharing content, reusing content, you know, if you're working in that business, you have to use it, you know, from the Data base spec. So they are related and they reuse many of the content, but they are separate documents. And there's going to be a timeline of publication. I think the goal is to have the Data 2.0 spec come out first and then the Lightweight Data spec and then technical content. But I'm supposed to be working on that calendar with Chris Eberlein. So if you see her, don't tell her that, you know, because it's not official.
It's our secret.
Yeah.
Nobody say anything.
No one say a word. That's great. All right. Awesome. Well, so, and the other half of the bio is you're doing work with the Hispanic Latinx Community Center, and you're working with multicultural audiences and misrepresented communities. How does this all fit in with that?
Like, well, it fits in quite well, let me tell you. Because the genesis of my involvement, the origin of my involvement with Data came from a project that I was working on many, many years ago. I came here, this is my 17th year at Virginia Tech. So I came here, and I was in my office and I was about to leave my office and go to lunch when my office phone rang, and I'm like, should I take the call or should I go to lunch? What should one do? So I took the call, and it was a police officer from the Virginia Tech Police saying, We got your name from the International Center at Virginia Tech because they said that you could translate something, okay? So I'm here on the highway with these two construction workers who are in pretty bad shape. They have been attacked and they don't speak English. So I wonder if you can help us translate what their problem is. And through the police officer's radio, I translated and I found out that the workers were Central American and they have been working for a construction company that came from Florida and had different stops in North Carolina and in Virginia in a very informal business structure. They will get on a trailer and they will live on the trailer, and during the day they will go and work. And at the end of the week, somebody will give them cash and then get on the trailer again so we can go to the next construction site. But that specific day, the person who was supposed to pay them didn't have the money. And when they asked for the money, the other guy who was drunk beat them with a baseball bat and ran away and left them. And this was the crew that had been traveling with them from Florida. So they didn't know anywhere to go. And of course, they didn't have papers. And one of them had broken ribs and I think a broken arm. This was 16 years ago, something like that. So I translated the information and the police officer took over. And that kept me thinking, this is a communication problem. Because these are construction workers who didn't understand their rights, didn't understand what are the safety standards that they should be using in the workplace. So what can I do to improve this situation? So that became like a big agenda item in my research. And I started asking around and I found out that Virginia Tech at that point had a center for research in construction safety and health, which was created with a grant from the NIH. And I went to see the then director of the center, Brian Kleiner, and I just introduced myself and said, hi, I'm a new assistant professor in English, and I kind of want to do work that improves the workplace communication of Latino construction workers. And they gave me a couple of grants to get my work started, and I was looking at, I want to have this repository of information that could be easy to translate, easy to adapt, easy to modify for people who cannot read in English, and also people who cannot read a lot, even in Spanish, and have pictures attached to every step and have a contextual help and things that will come out. So that's why I started using data in my projects. You know, I knew that data existed when I was a grad student at Texas Tech. You know, Joyce Locke Carter was one of my professors in one of her classes. We talk about single sourcing and data. So I knew that XML was a thing and data was a thing, but I had never really used it for my purposes. And that's where I started working on projects that were related to data and also related to, you know, my research interests. And let's be very honest, my identity as a Mexican American researcher, because I was like, I should be doing something to help these guys. So that's how I got involved with data. And that took me on the complicated path of, there's another thing that we can do to make data more accessible and more and embrace more diverse authors, which is, don't expect that everybody is going to be using XML and the data open toolkit in the command line. Because if you think that everybody is a dude, because it's a dude who's going to be doing their XML in Notepad++ and then going to the terminal to transform, that does not make the profession, that does not make the field more diverse. So we have to present alternatives to that to make it, you know, more inclusive. So there's a connecting thread, you know, that starts with construction workers and ends with lightweight data. But, you know, if you open my brain and see where things are connecting and clicking, to me, it's part of that connection of trying to make technical communication and technical communications, the actual products, more accessible, more inclusive, and more diverse. So that's, I think that's the driving engine.
What an amazing story.
That is an amazing story. And it's interesting how that connective thread, I mean, that's like a thing that repeats for you over and over again. It's what you live and breathe.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and we're all lucky that you put that to your life's work because we benefit from it.
Oh, thank you. I hope you like we did.
Well, I love Ditta. I'm sure I'm going to love lightweight Ditta too.
She likes it even when she's not using the markup.
Right?
And again, there are many tools.
I love anything that makes communication easier and breaks down barriers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah.
In all aspects of your work, your life's work is breaking down those barriers so that we can communicate better. Yeah, and it crosses boundaries, which is really important. You're not just talking to technical communicators. You're talking to anyone who writes professional communications of any kind. Yeah. And there's a lot of them out there, right?
And what I want to emphasize is that it's not just me, of course. There's the team, and Michael Priestley was the original brain behind, let's do a an approach to structuring and publishing content in a data-like environment that crosses silos. That if you live in this community that only uses XML, when you interact with somebody who doesn't use XML, you either cry or you try to evangelize them and be like, XML will save your soul. But no, we're going to present an alternative and hope that people can collaborate and exchange information. So there's a group of people who quite religiously come to the Lightweight Data Subcommittee meetings and give their opinion and give their feedback, give their input, and they just get it going on.
Yeah, a standard isn't built by one person alone.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. It wouldn't be usable.
Chris Eberlein does most of the work by herself, but even so, there's input from the community.
Yeah, there's a team behind it. There's always a team behind it.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. But I like that crossover for your work and your body of work, right? Yeah. From helping non-native English speakers, right? So that connects.
That connects in my brain. It connects, and it even connects in my teaching, not just in my research and my publications, but in the things that I teach. That sometimes it might look like the things that I teach are very disconnected from one another. For example, I teach this semester, I'm teaching a course on diversity, equity, and inclusion in the media and how representations of misrepresented communities in the media have impacts in society and in real life. And I'm also teaching a senior a graduate seminar on content operations. And in my mind, they're kind of related because, they're, again, about making things inclusive and accessible to different audiences. And that's how things process,
That's the magic, right?
Yeah.
Earlier you mentioned the word statistics, and that's something that usually sends chills down people's spine. And it's funny because I thought back to my college days, and I honestly, I'll tell you truthfully, I had to take stats more than once. And I had stats from one person who was very rigid in one way, and then I had stats from somebody who taught ballroom dancing. And his ability to apply something that felt a little unapproachable to something that was every day was phenomenal. So the way that your mind works and that connective neural pathways that you create is so unique and so wonderful. And that's what brings all of these things together. And that's what's infused in the work that you do.
Yeah.
So that's what I meant. And it makes it approachable and interesting. That's why I always think you're so interesting to talk to.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jenny.
Because your mind works.
We didn't even know the construction story. I mean, yeah, we're already fascinated.
Thank you.
So, but that's how breakthroughs happen, right? When things connect across places where you never would have guessed.
Yeah. You come to the job with your research agenda and you're like, I'm going to be writing this. And then suddenly you're like, no, I'm going to go in this very different direction because there's a need There's, you know, what the researchers say, there's an exigence, there's a this problem that I need to tackle, and I need to tackle it now because it's a hot topic, and I think that I have something that, you know, can help. Even if it's not going to solve the problem for everybody, at least it can set a precedent that people can take a look at and try to replicate and see how it works. Yeah.
Absolutely. We were booking our next speaker, and she's doing things in an arena that is not known for people like her. So it's, I that's part of the fun of all of this, is I get to see all that. So, but you said something. What did you think you were going to do? You said your job thinking you're going to do this, and then something happens and you find something new.
Yep.
What did you think you were going to do?
There were two things that I had, and we go back to 17 years ago. When I came here to Virginia Tech, I had a book contract under my arm for an edited collection on outsourcing technical communication that I co-edited with Barry Thatcher. And the book was published, you know, it took a couple of years to get all the chapters done because I got involved with the construction workers project and I couldn't put all the effort that I was expecting that I was going to put into the outsourcing book. But that was my main project. And there was another project that, funny enough, was like my own implementation of single sourcing that I was looking at with a SQL database and PHP for the code of, let's create this tool that will allow people to store the content in a database. It's like a homemade version of WordPress for technical documentation that I abandoned because, of course, I discovered that there was this whole other world of XML that was doing that with a flat file database that did not require the relational database of SQL. But, you know, that's what I wanted to do when I graduated from my PhD. I wanted to create my own tool for reusing content, and I wanted to explore the whole idea of outsourcing technical communication, which we did because we worked for a couple of years on the book, and the book was published in 2009, something like that. That's when the outsourcing technical communication book was published by Baywood. Yeah.
Neat.
Hey, I have a question because we're almost out of time.
I got a question from the audience.
Yeah, I got a question for you. So let's say somebody's already in DITA, mm-hmm. hardcore DITA, and they want to move over into lightweight DITA. Mm-hmm. So anything they need to know?
Here's the question. Why? If DITA is working for you, and if you are in an industry that really requires the structure that DITA is giving you, I do not expect that you're going to abandon DITA and go to lightweight DITA, because lightweight DITA cannot do everything that DITA does. Mm-hmm. So if you're already on DITA and DITA makes you happy, then don't switch. But if you want to...
What if there's like a markdown project that they need?
Okay, to- yeah. Well, then if you want to start incorporating additional sources of input, all that you have to do is, number one, find out with your IT person, what tools are you using to process your DITA? Because the DITA Open Toolkit has had support for lightweight DITA for more than a year. But you have to be sure that your IT people are using a version of the OT that supports lightweight DITA. Otherwise, it ain't going to work. So all that you have to do, you can start by reading our committee note. At least you said you were going to paste the committee note on the notes. So people can take a look at that and see how we map structures and elements from DITA into the different authoring formats of lightweight DITA. And create your topic in Markdown, which is going to be a file in Markdown that is written in a DITA-like environment. Now, it's not going to have the schema or DTD in XML that's going to slap you in the wrist when you put a paragraph inside a paragraph. So that's where you have to use, you know, your skills as a writer and as an editor to create your own file. And then what you're going to do, you're going to incorporate that Markdown, treating it like a regular topic in your maps. If you have a DITA map that has aggregates a collection of DITA topics, just add that one And be sure to give it the attribute of format equals mdata. So when you process your tool, your stack knows that you're incorporating a markdown or mdata file into your mix. And if you're using, if your IT people are using the right version of the OT, the magic should happen. And again, that's the beauty of it. It's seamless and to the end users. The end users don't know what came from where. They just get a single document that is coherent and consistent. So the starting point is read the committee note. Mm-hmm. If you want more about lightweight data, you can go buy a book about lightweight data that somebody wrote. I'm not going to peddle his book because we're not supposed to be money out of it. But I wrote it. So you can go Google the lightweight data book and you can just start working on that. But if you don't want to buy my book, you know, maybe you can send me a nice message and I don't mind. I might send you a sample of it. Or even Larry Collar wrote his own free little version of how to do lightweight data. So, you know, it's out there. He's works very hard and he's been a supporter of lightweight data. So I give him mad respect and he has his own little open source book on lightweight data that will get you started too. So there are many approaches that you can take, but talk to your IT people to be sure that there is support for lightweight data in the environment, in the stack that you're using.
All right, great. Thank you. So we're a little over time, sorry, but I just really want to thank you, Carlos, for coming and talking with us today. It has been such a delight having you here, and I hope you'll come back one day. And again, thank you so much for donating your time.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
It was great talking to you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And for sharing everything about yourself. We appreciate that.
So we've got all of your contact information and all the points of interest for people. It's in the show notes. And I know Liz has put it also in the comment section here for people to connect with you. We strongly encourage people to connect with Carlos. As you can tell, he's very easy to talk to, very approachable. Send your examples of what you're doing right now. Did it with lightweight data.
He so wants
just,
it.
Just know any changes are not going to happen in spec 1.0.
Awesome. Great. All right. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you.
See you all again next time.
Bye. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.